This is the final whistle on Ocean FM. Tonight, we're on the road from Giva to the Stadium of Light. Keith McGrath is heading to the English Premier League with Sunderland next season. The first team's strength and conditioning lead joins us. Glenview Stars women's soccer team have made the last eight of the FAI Amateur Cup. Team manager Gina O'Boyle looks ahead to Sunday's quarterfinal in Dublin against Whitehall Rangers. Plus, Sligo Rovers boss John Russell on Friday night's home game against St. Pat's, the chances of persuading Jack Henry Francis back to the showgrounds, and the Wonder Kids' wonder goal.
Oh, the shot for Elding! Oh, an Elding! What a beauty!
I was right behind it, Austin. It was unbelievable strike by Elding.
Spectacular.
Welcome to the programme. This is Austin O'Callaghan and here are the contact details if you want to get in touch. 083 3500 530 by WhatsApp and text. sport@oceanfm.ie is the email address and you'll get us on Twitter as well at @OceanFMSport.
Tom Davis making his presence felt. That's loose though by Moore and it falls the way of Watson.
Yeah, that was Tom Watson's goal at Wembley last Saturday, which sent Sunderland back up to the English Premier League next season. Their 2-1 win against Sheffield United in the Championship playoff final sparked memorable scenes, and in amongst it all was a man from Giva. 33-year-old Keith McGrath is a lead strength and conditioning coach with Sunderland. He's been with the club since February of 2023. Keith grew up playing Gaelic football with Giva. His dad Timmy is involved with the club's senior team these days. But now Keith is getting ready to work at Anfield, Old Trafford, the Etihad Stadium and the Emirates from next season with Sunderland. And he's been talking to Ocean FM Sport this week. We began with that final whistle at Wembley last Saturday.
It was quite surreal, to be fair. Like we're all in the dugouts, and it's kind of that moment where it's leading to it, and you're like, you always have that bit of trepidation in the last few minutes, kind of, oh, something bad could happen here. We're in front. I didn't think this could happen us, and you're kind of just, all the players are getting ready to just run on the pitch, and you're just sitting there like, oh my god, is this actually happening? And then it just, the final whistle went, and it was just a weird one because I think a few emotions came into my head in the sense of, I'm from a small part of Ireland, like Giva, like I don't think this type of stuff happens to us, and just thinking like this kind of emotions came from thinking of my partner who's in the crowd, and then my parents, and just kind of like, oh my God, we've actually done it. The hard work we've put in for the season, these players who've sacrificed a lot, and we've sacrificed a lot of staff to try and get to this position, and we've done it. It was kind of almost you're trying to catch your breath. You don't know what's happening. I was just in shock, and you're just kind of there, and you're hugging people, and I was just like, the first person seeing was the sub keeper, and we're just hugging, and we're like, we've done it, and the thing we've worked at all season from the 1st of July all the way to the 24th of May, like doing 6-7 day weeks, working all these kind of hours and just putting our lives on hold outside and just making a lot of sacrifices to get to this was just a flooding of emotions, probably is the best way I can put it.
Well, that's the word you touched on. I was going to ask you next. Sunderland are a big, big club in England. They always have been, regardless of what division they've been in when it comes to soccer. It's a club that has always struck me as a very emotional club, and that probably goes back to Niall Quinn's time there, and he was in the crowd as a loyal Sunderland fan on Saturday. Yeah. You know, the Roy Keane effect, and lots of other connections down through the years and decades. Do you get a sense of that emotion during your time at Sunderland?
Yeah, definitely. suppose at the start you kind of hear all these things. I would have followed Sunderland obviously with that Irish connection, and you would have had that like kind of soft spot to them when Niall Quinn was there and Roy Keane managing and everything like that. You kind of get a sense of what the club is like. It's like the fan club, like it is a big club, and you don't realise until you get into it and how big the fans are as well. And I probably didn't get a proper sense of that until really the second leg of the playoff semi-final, of just what the fans done for us in that game. And like, it was at home, we were 2-1 up in the from the first leg, and like they had, I think we came down on the bus from the training ground, which isn't far, but the fans just had, like, there's a little road beside the stadium that you go down, and they just had it flooded. And I can only compare it to what Anfield was like on a Champions League night. Like, just had flares out, thousands of fans just side of the road, like we couldn't see in front of us. And it's just like, you kind of have everyone kind of rooting for you as well. Like, there's no badness. Everyone wants you to see, everyone, like in the Northeast especially, wants to see you do well. And it's like, they have a massive following. I didn't realise that until like this season, of how much they pushed us and got us through some bad times, like the last few games of the league, and then going into the playoffs, how much they pushed us, and just how, like, as staff and the club itself, how they try and look after you and like make you feel a part of it and do as best they can just to make you feel like welcomed. And same with the fans, how good they are with you as a staff member. Like, you're me, I'm in the background, I'm a support staff really, but when they're all there willing you on, and they make you feel as important as a player at times when they're kind of congratulating you and everything like that.
I'm going to come back to Sunderland, to Wembley and the Premier League next season in a couple of moments, Keith. But can I rewind the clock first of all?
Yeah.
Because an email came into Ocean FM here last week to say, do you know there's a guy from Giva who's a strength and conditioning coach at Sunderland, and they're playing at Wembley this weekend in the Championship playoff final? And I was saying to myself, I hold my hand up, Keith who? Keith McGrath, who are you? What should we know about your story?
No, right. Well, I'd love to know who that person was. I don't think it was my father, because I'm not too sure he can send an email. Me, probably, like, started in Giva, obviously. Like playing Gaelic all the way up from underage into senior. And originally I moved over to England when, what am I, 23? I think it was, yeah, 10, just over 10 years ago.
Did you play soccer at all in Sligo Leitrim?
Only a little bit for Ara Harps in Riverstown, only when I was 15. Played a year, eventually got me best friend Shane, he eventually pulled me over to the soccer side for a season, and I enjoyed it, but it was always Gaelic football growing up for me, especially with my dad. He was very much into Gaelic football, so he always had us pushed into that. It was kind of like, it was to get me to England, like, it was all probably a bit of luck and circumstances for me, because I did 2 years of sports therapy in Cavan Institute. I originally wanted to do physiotherapy. But then in that time, my parents had moved to England, and they were running a pub in London, and there was a couple that they were friendly with that came into the pub, and they were in worked in Roehampton University in London, near Fulham, and they just said about a sports science course, because I initially was going to go physio, but then I thought I'd like to do sports science. And in that time, I went to Carlow Institute for about 6 months, and I didn't really enjoy the course at the time. I decided to just transfer over to England, and did my undergrad at Roehampton University for 3 years, and lived with my parents as well at the time. And then from there, I worked at AFC Wimbledon as an intern. So kind of when you get into football in England, you kind of have to do a year or two unpaid work just to get some experience, because it's quite a hard field to get into. So I was, now looking back, I'm very lucky to get into Wimbledon, because I've made some lifelong friends from the club, like coaches from the academy at the time, and they helped me a lot, just like moving over and just showing me around London, because I wasn't sure what to expect. And then from there, I was lucky enough to get a a part-time role over at Charlton Athletic in their academy, and that was kind of my first paid role in a sense in football in England. And that was the goal for me when I started as an intern. I wanted to kind of just get a full-time paid role in football, and that was all it was. Like, that's all I wanted to do. And luckily enough, I did well at Charlton Athletic, and then a position came up at Sheffield Wednesday, and I moved up there, and I worked at their academy, their 18s, and then was head of academy sports science then for a year, and then moved up into the first team there at Sheffield Wednesday, and enjoyed it, spent 3 years there, and like loved it, made some great friends and met some great like practitioners, like sports scientists and strength and conditioning coaches who have since helped me. And then from there, kind of met my now partner when I was living in Sheffield, and she's from Hartlepool. So I made the choice to move up to Hartlepool, and luckily the role came up in rugby league in Newcastle Thunder. At the time, they went full-time from part-time, and a role came up as an S&C. And I moved, worked for them for 6 months. And then a lad I know who was head of sports science at Hartlepool United said, like, do you want to come back into football? And I said, yeah, I'd love, like, of course I'd like to come back into football. And it was a role in a team I live very close to, so circumstances were really good. So worked for Hartlepool United for about, all in all, probably a season and a half. And then kind of things paid out. The club didn't go the way we hoped at the time. And I knew my now line manager at Sunderland, and he said there was a role coming up at Sunderland. Would you be interested? And I said, of course. The club had, like, from the outside in, looked like it was going places and had stuff set up well, and it's a big club. And I was like, yeah, I'll interview for it, and got the role there in the academy, and then did a season with the academy, and then from there moved up to the first team quite quickly, and now, and yeah, spent about 18 months in the first team, and then was originally brought in as a performance coach in the first team, and then promoted to head of strength and rehab, head strength and rehab coach in November. And then, this is kind of where I am at the moment. That's kind of the long story of moving around.
It's a very interesting story, Keith. And is the bulk of your day then taken up with the first team, or do you work with all age groups at Sunderland?
It's the good thing with Sunderland, we have a big emphasis on the academy and young players coming through. So my, like, 90% of my job would be solely focused on the first team, but probably that 10%, which stems from like what the club want, is kind of have a big focus of helping the young players and the academy players, and having a process set up where there's an easy transition of young players coming into the first team if they're deemed good enough. And we have a kind of a good alignment from first team down. So the good thing with us, and I don't see it in many clubs I've worked at, is a big, like, emphasis on collaboration between the academy and the first team, which is really good, because we're all in it together, in the sense of there's no separation from academy and first team, which you can see a lot of places, but we're all in it together and we help each other, which is good. So like 90% would be first team seniors, and then at 10% you'd be kind of helping out if lads need it in the academy, or, you know, kind of, we're all, like, it's the main emphasis, we're all one team and we collaborate together, which is good.
So I'm guessing you have gotten to know some of the Sunderland first team players pretty well while you're with them in groups. I'm sure there's plenty of one-to-one sessions as well. So you kind of get in under the bonnet here a bit.
Yeah, very, like, it's kind of probably the way I am as a person. I'm lucky enough, like, probably helps from growing up in, and my dad ran pubs from when I was a baby, and you're kind of in around that environment that your communication skills are quite good. So I was lucky in that sense. I'm very good with the interpersonal skills and communicating with players. And I've got, you get very close with them because you're with them 6-7 days a week from, 8 in the morning till you know, 4, half 4 in the evening, and so you spend a lot of time together, and then you travel away with each other, and kind of when you're winning games and losing games, you kind of create a little bond because you're in it together. And then at the end of the day, as a coach, you just want them to do well. Like they do sacrifice a lot. Granted, they get a lot of money for what they do, but they do sacrifice a lot, and all they want to do is just achieve their goals of being successful. And you know, if it's playing in the Premier League or staying at this club for 10, 15 years, you just want them to do well. So yeah, you do strike up kind of friendships and closeness with players through the season.
And come a Sunderland match day, I'm guessing much of your work is already done from earlier in the week. So are you kind of sitting on your hands on the day, or do you have a role on a match day?
Yeah, I do. Like we have a team of three now, in the sense of mine, I mainly focus on the gym side and the rehabilitation side of players, and then we have another performance coach who focuses solely on the kind of the outside stuff, the fitness side, the GPS monitor and all that, and then we have another performance coach who kind of mixes in between both. So kind of our jobs are done from that Monday all the way onto the Friday, the day before a game. So really on the Saturday, our main role is warming up the lads pre-game, or like in the warm-up, and then you do some bits of prep inside as well with players. So, and trying to think of other things, you do a little bit in the setting up the nutrition and hydration stuff for players pre-game, but majority of your role is done in the training week. You don't have much to do on a match day, but you're still in and around it. You're still on the pitch warming them up, and you're still in amongst them, prepping them as best you can on a match day.
I'm looking at the official Sunderland website here, Keith, and there is a page. The title of it is Academy, Get to Know Keith McGrath, an opportunity for readers to get to know you, where you come from, who you are. Yeah. It probably is that you were 11 months in the club at the time, so it's not that old. But they ask you at the very end, name us one goal for the future, and your answer reads, to work in the Premier League with Sunderland. You've achieved that goal pretty quickly.
Yeah, it is mad. Like, going back to what I said previously, my only goal originally was to work in full time football, and I kind of achieved that quite quickly. And then I was like, let's reassess them, and then it was just head up a sports science department in an academy in England. And luckily enough, I did that quite quickly. And then you kind of change your goals, and you're like, well, let's see about working in the first team setting. And then again, I achieved that quite quickly, which was good. And then from there, you're kind of like, well, what do we do next? And you kind of, you want to head up a first team sports science department at a first team level, which I did at Hartlepool. And then from there, you're like, well, go to Sunderland, and you want to work in the Premier League. And previous to that, you just wanted to work in the Premier League, but then you get into Sunderland and you're like, no, this club is actually really special when you're in it, and you want, because it should be a Premier League club, which it is now, but you want to be there with them. You want to kind of create something and build it and get into the Premier League, and from the Championship, the way we've done, you kind of just want to work to get there instead of just kind of getting a job at like Liverpool or Man United. You want to show you've built something and you've worked hard to get there.
We know football cross-channel is a pretty cutthroat business, Keith, particularly in the top tier, the Premier League. If it's not working out for a manager, he or she is invariably shown the door. Ditto for players. Is there a similar sort of pressure for the backroom team?
At certain clubs, there definitely is. At certain clubs, we're lucky in the sense of the model Sunderland have is very much they look after their staff and they keep that core group of Sunderland staff, where the great thing in the past few years and before I joined is to have a plan and a process in place where they don't want to just, if things aren't going well, we'll get rid of the staff and then we'll bring new staff in. They want good staff in that fit the Sunderland model, and we're all kind of singing on the same hymn sheet, which is really good. And that makes you kind of want to work harder for the club, because they trust you to do your job. They want you just to add value and make things better, and then inevitably they'll keep you on, and that's the good thing at Sunderland. Some clubs are like that. They're quite cutthroat and they'll chop and change. But I think the great thing about Sunderland is they had a plan in place. They trusted the process, and it kind of has paid off. And we're lucky in the sense of we've had good managers in the past, and now the manager we have at the moment is excellent in the sense of how he has made us all better and just kind of pushed things and helped the players as well. It's all kind of fitted really well. And we're lucky in that sense. I suppose you do put pressure on yourself. I always will, in the sense of, you know, you want to do the best, that you don't want to potentially get fired and that type of thing. But we're lucky in the sense of the club don't put that type of pressure on us, but they just want us to add value and just make things better than when we got them.
Have you moved to Sunderland? Is Sunderland now your home?
No, I live in Hartlepool now with my partner. She's from here. I've settled down here now, which is, it's a nice place. I do like the northeast. It's more than lovely places in England. Does like the people, in the sense of, they remind me a bit of home, in the sense of how friendly they are, and you know how friendly they are, and they'll talk to you and like stuff like that. Where London was very much the opposite. Where up the northeast, people are just like nice working class, hard working people, and they're just nice and always they'll say hello to you on a walk and stuff like that. So it's quite nice up here.
And I'm sure you've got a clear sense already of the nature of the rivalry when it comes to Tyneside football between Sunderland, Newcastle United, as will be the case next season in the Premier League, and Middlesbrough are part of the conversation as well. It's probably a far cry from the rivalry between Giva and St. Michael's or Shamrock Gales in a club game that you would have played in back in the day.
No, they were good days. That was good. I think it got to a stage, it was like friendly rivalry. Like, you always had that rivalry between like the three clubs, and you love those kind of games. Still have friends that play like Shamrock Gales and St. Michael's. I think it was a healthy rivalry. Like, there was never any badness. Where I suppose the Newcastle Sunderland derby is just that much like on another level. Where like I've good friends at the moment who are Newcastle fans, and like the good thing up in the northeast is everyone wants to see northeast clubs doing well, except against each other. And the big thing, like some Newcastle fans were saying to me, is just like they want us to go up because they want that derby day back, because like for them it's a great day. Like, there is that, you know, I suppose you could call it hatred or stuff like that. It's probably not. It's just a sense of that big day of, you know, friends and family kind of have that rivalry, because there's families that are like divided, whether Newcastle and Sunderland, and you have that kind of that really good rivalry. And I think in the northeast they've missed that. And you could see it when last season when we played them in the cup, you could see both sets of fans really wanted those derby days back. Which is the exciting thing going into next season, is you'll have those two games back, and hopefully we'll come out on the right side of those ones.
As a matter of interest, Keith, your Gaelic football upbringing and background, playing with Giva, playing in the club environment in a GAA sense, I know it's very different in many ways to the full-time professional soccer atmosphere of England, but were some of the skills transferable? I mean, was there anything you were able to take or learn from that?
Oh, yeah. I was lucky enough to have some like great coaches from underage, like from like John Hughes, Jerry McManus, John Hargadon, to like my dad as well. Like, you take a lot of stuff. Probably my first kind of glimmer of like S&C in Giva was probably with John Hughes, and that was probably, I think we were under 14s, and he'd have us doing some, like, looking back into some great drills, like running drills and tackling drills, like, and that was probably my first I suppose S&C is. And then from there, when I was like playing underage with Sligo, you had likes of like Liam O'Gormley trying to was initially pushing like S&C on us, which, and then that was the kind of first proper programs I would have kind of come across, from like strengthening programs and fitness type stuff. And then you kind of, as you moved up in age groups, like under 18s at Geevan and seniors, you kind of just did more research yourself and you kind of look at what you need to do. And, you know, we had some like great people who had in Geevan who played at some like great level, like Darren Kearns, who really kind of pushed us on, you know, what we need to do right, like when we want to play football and look after ourselves. And then you kind of start doing your own research, and you kind of, for me, like, I love that side of it, the fitness side and the strength side of it. Probably more the fitness side. I wasn't the biggest when I was finishing playing at Geeve. I was fit, but I kind of neglected a bit of the strength side, which, like, in hindsight, was probably the wrong thing for me to do at the time. But yeah, it was all kind of just as I grew up and was surrounded by good people, I got that glimmer of what S&C and strength work and fitness is. And then you kind of notice, or you know what the right stuff to do and how the S&C side benefits you as a player. And you can see it now, in especially in Gaelic football now, how it's transformed into, from a very technical sport to still technical, but like they're physically huge men now and they run for days and they're massive units of fellas.
And just going back to something you mentioned there, did you play a little bit of county football underage for Sligo?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I played up to under 16s. Then probably, I don't know, I was getting a bit older as a teenager, and I probably, in a weird way looking back, and I fell out a bit of love of playing football all the time. And I kind of, like, I don't know, just in the sense, wanted to relax a little bit as a 16, 17 year old, which wasn't the right thing to do at the time, because I think I had loads of like good coaches pushing me, and I just kind of never listened. And I probably, I don't know, you probably have to ask them, I could have probably pushed into the 18 setup and pushed from there, but I kind of never, I don't know, it's in the sense, I don't know, not wanted to, but just didn't have the drive to do it, I suppose, at the time, which is probably a regret of mine when I was underage.
Well, listen, Keith, it's a great Sligo story. I think your dad, Timmy, is giving serious thought to starting up a Geeva branch of the Sunderland Supporters Club here in Ireland. And if we hear next season that Geeva are changing their club colours to red and white stripes, we'll know who to blame.
Yeah, that'll be my fault, yeah. No, I know. Like it is like you don't realize until you sit back of how kind of a good story is, because I don't like to talk about myself too much or stuff like that. You kind of just get on with the job and you know enjoy it as best you can and just kind of push and try and have some success along the way. And it is nice to kind of chat to yous and tell the story, and it just kind of makes you realize how lucky I am. It's like you're growing up in a small parish, like in Geevan, playing football all the way up to seniors, and just like you just enjoy football and you watch the Premier League on TV and you're thinking, you just watch it, you never think you're going to be there someday. So that kind of emotion comes in when you're like, oh, actually I'm going to be there, you know, I'm going to be on, going out in Anfield, I'm going out in the stadium light when Man United are coming to town, or I'm going to be at a Newcastle Sunderland game kind of thing. And you just kind of, it just all hits you at once, and you're like, wow, like I'm very lucky to be able to do what I do.
Not a bad way to make a living, is it? Sunderland and Geeva's Keith McGrath, who are both Premier League bound next season. When we come back, we're Showgrounds bound, Sligo Rovers boss John Russell on St. Pat's, Owen Elding, and maybe, just maybe, doing another deal with Arsenal during the transfer window. Plus, the Stars take on the Rangers in Dublin on Sunday. Glenview Stars women's soccer team play Whitehall Rangers in the FAI Amateur Cup quarter-final. That's next. Well, after the recent Connaught Cup and Shield successes for Gurcheen Celtic and Ara Harps, respectively, in women's soccer, another Sligo Leitrim club moves to the business end of a major cup competition. The league and cup double winners locally, Glenview Stars, head to Dublin on Sunday to play Whitehall Rangers in the FAI Amateur Cup quarter-final. Whitehall have twice reached the final of this national competition, so Glenview manager Gina O'Boyle knows his side will be up against it.
Yeah, Whitehall would be a very good side. They'd reached the final last year. Terenure beat them. But I feel we have a very good team and we have a good chance of winning the game.
There's been a lot of good attention on Sligo Leitrim women's soccer in recent weeks with the Cup and Shield successes for Gurcheen Celtic and Ara Harps. And it perhaps accidentally overshadowed what Glenview Stars have achieved this season in the local leagues by winning another league and cup double. You've had quite the year already in 2025.
Yeah, no, we're ecstatic anyways. It's great to see Sligo teams doing well. I said at the end of the season, I think we have definitely up there with the strongest league in the country. We definitely have the strongest league in the province. I think all the teams in Sligo Leitrim are capable of doing extraordinary things. And as you say, it's Gurcheen Celtic and Ara Harps. So I think it's only a great step forward for the league. And you have to bear in mind, this league is only formed. We're 2 years on the go. For ourselves, it's been a massive success. 2 seasons unbeaten in the local league and cup, and maybe something that's hoping we can continue again for another season next year. But foot forward now for the game on Sunday. We've trained the last Monday and Wednesday. We've had a lot of excitement, and it's a big game for the girls, and we have to give credit to them, and especially their families who've put up with well over a year of training, if not two. And hopefully we can get the success we need on Sunday.
Tell us a little bit about this collection of players you've assembled. I mean, I know you said it's a relatively young team because the league is young, but over the past 2 years, you have two league titles and two Sligo Bay Lobsters Cup titles to show for your work. Tell us a bit about the players.
Ah, look, we have a fantastic squad. Everybody has given such an amount of effort to get this far. The last two seasons with the league, especially the first year, I think was really the most important, because the first one up and running, whenever people retire in 40 years' time, you can look back and say, yeah, look, we won the first one at M, we were happy. And then for anybody who has a lot of history in local soccer, the late great Nancy Callan is a great-grandmother of myself, but also great-grandmother of Jennifer White, and the sponsor of the Sligo Lobster Bay League, Owen McLaughlin. And it was Jennifer White who scored the first goal in the Lobster Bay League. So just that wee bit of historical context with it. We're all generating from the one family, and it's great to see, you know.
Certainly is. And this is a lovely test to have at a national level to see where you are, so to speak.
Yeah, well, look, it's the last eight. We got this far. It wasn't on merit. It wasn't just being put there as a merit. You look at the teams we've beaten along the way, very good sides. And we beat Gurcheen after they beat us in the Connacht semi-final. They went on and they won the Connacht Cup. We beat them. We beat a good team in Letterkenny Rovers. So it's kind of just, for me, I think it'll know where we're at. There is a couple of players that we have with extraordinary experience anyway. We see Laura McGuinn is going to be heading away with the futsal team to the European Championships sometime at the end of June. So to have players of that calibre ourselves, it's not a thing that we're going in thinking we're outclassed. I think we're going to be definitely well matched. It's going to come down to on the day. I know our girls are very up for it, as we can see from the trainings the past couple of weeks. And again, with that bit of success that we've had in the last couple of years, I think we can only go forward. It's something that the girls thoroughly deserve.
Certainly do. Glenview Stars boss Gina O'Boyle and Stars against Whitehall Rangers is being played at the Paddy Mahoney Park on the north side in Dublin on Sunday at 2:00. We'll have live commentary this Friday night of Sligo Rovers against St. Patrick's Athletic from the showgrounds in the League of Ireland Premier Division. Rovers' last game before the mid-season break. They could move off the bottom if they get a better result against Pats than Cork City do against Shelburne. Rovers manager John Russell spoke to reporters today online, including Ocean FM Sport. We'll get his thoughts shortly on Owen Elding's rising curve, a possible return to the showgrounds for a familiar face from last season, but first to the likely return of Jake Doyle Hayes to the starting 11 this weekend after missing the Shells game last week through injury.
Yeah, look, Jake's been a brilliant signing for us. The caliber of player we brought in, the level he's played at SPL, he's played in England, And when he's been in the team, I think every game we've won this season, he's been on the pitch. And he brings quality, but he also brings leadership. And he's a big player for us. And obviously everyone knows we have a small squad. And when you're missing your top players, it can have consequences. So hopefully he can be on the pitch tomorrow and help us win the game.
This is your last game before the mid-season break. In a way, could your players do with a break just to regroup and reassess?
Look, we're full focus on winning the game tomorrow. We need to finish strong, get points on the board and see how the other results go tomorrow night. But if we get what we deserve in terms of a home performance and we've shown at home we can get points on the board, the break comes at a good time for everyone when it's been a tough period. You can recharge the batteries and then come in fresh and look to attack the second half of the season.
What's the one thing you've spent time working on this week, would you say?
Yeah, defending the box. The players know we're one of the highest goal scorers in the league. We're creating chances, but we've leaked the most amount of goals and we have to defend our box better. We have to be secure when we're attacking, and that's probably at times when we've had possession of the ball high up and we've lost and there's been turnovers. It's making sure that we're getting that counter press right, and if we don't, once we get into recovery runs, which we have, we're getting into good positions, but then it's making sure we see it out and track runs. And I mentioned after the game against Shells, the three goals are all preventable and the players know that, and we showed the previous week when we've done that against Galway, we've kept a clean sheet and we've got 3 points.
Okay, John, that's all for me for now. Thanks.
Thanks, Austin.
Tell us about Owen, working with Owen and his development, his maturation, and the fact he's clearly not being overawed by the opportunity that you've given him.
Yeah, look, he's a fabulous talent. I think you could see in pre-season the way he came back, how he worked in the off-season, that he had a big year ahead of him. And that's why I spoke to the club and said, look, we need to tie him on a long-term contract, which we have. And it's no surprise to me what he's doing. I've known Owen since he's probably been 11 when I was the development officer. And he's been in around the first team since he's 17. And his progression, I think last year was probably frustration for him. I think he made 25 appearances, but maybe only two or three starts, a lot of them off the bench, and he missed a few chances. But you have to be patient with young players. And now he's showing everyone what he's about, and he's going from strength to strength. And not only is he scoring goals, he's impacting the game, both offensively and defensively. And what I love about him is his mentality. Like even the last night, we go 3-1 down and he's like, give me the ball, I'm going to make something happen. And that's when you know you've got a proper player. And for a kid who's just turned 19, he's got a real bright future.
So you've known him 8 years, which is unusual for a senior manager to know a player that length of time. Was there any sort of sliding doors moment, John, in his teenage, well, he still is a teenager, but in his younger years when... Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of convinced you that you've got a player in your hands here. Any particular game at underage that struck you as sort of seminal for his development?
No, there was no one game. When he was growing up, he always showed promise. I would have seen him playing futsal when I was development officer. When he was in school, and I think his school in Riverstown won the All Ireland, if I'm not mistaken, in the Aviva, the school five-a-side as well. So, look, he's been a prospect all the way through. But then it's, can you, when you enter the men's game, can you transform and step up to that level? And look, he's shown that. I said he's progressed nicely over the last 18 months, and now he's become a massive player for us and one of the most exciting and most creative players in the league.
There's obviously a number of young strikers who are doing really well in the league now. Probably more getting their opportunities now than when you would have been playing, I'd imagine. Why is that? Is it because coaches are younger and more trustful of players, or is it down to their physique and the fact that they're so well conditioned and ready for adult football? Or what is it that's leading to so many coming through and playing at such a... playing so well at such a high level?
Yeah, I think the difference from when I was playing and now is the academy system that wasn't in place. So I feel, you know, the structures have been put in place. Yes, we need more funding and we all can agree on that in terms of full-time coaches and facilities, but the structures are there and players still come through, and that's been a big help. And then Brexit as well, the most outstanding young talent now are in the League of Ireland and they're in first team environments. And what we've tried to do at Sligo is the guys who are in school is try and get them in at least once a week, because they don't all live locally. If they can come in early, and look, Owen, because he was in school in Sligo, was in a lot more than most kids. So his development was accelerated. He wasn't just playing underage football. He was in the first team for the last 18 months, playing friendlies, training full time. And that's what happens. You get to the point then where you're standing out and it's contact time. It's not rocket science. We all kind of know what to do, but it's putting that in place. And I feel we're getting the rewards as a league now with all these young players coming in. And maybe, as you mentioned, young coaches, do they give young players an opportunity possibly?
Do you feel there's even more to come from Owen, John?
Absolutely. He's just turned 19. He's still learning the game, but what he's shown so far is outstanding, and he's got a really high ceiling. And we've got more players. I know Jad is on the call here, who we brought in the season, and with the Irish 21s, again, a huge prospect, huge talent. And we've more Garrett McElroy, who's stepped up this year with Ollie Denham being injured, only 20 years of age, again, playing week in, week out, and surely he's knocking on the door of the Irish 21s as well. So we've got some really good attacking talent and some good defenders too coming through.
A squad question, first of all, John. Have you loan players in terms of that you won't have the second half, or have you people that you'll lose?
Yeah, so Harvey Lintott is on loan until the summertime, and then he goes back to Northampton. He's the only loan we've had this year. I had a couple of loans lined up that fell through. But yeah, we'll definitely look to the loan market for the 1st of July and try and utilise that like we did last year with the likes of Jack Henry Francis and Luke Pearce came in July.
It looks like Jack Henry Francis might be leaving Arsenal. Is that, can you go back there again? I mean, are you still in touch, or are you aware of his situation, or is there any contact there?
Yeah, look, we've been in touch with Arsenal. We've good relationship since Jack came over, and there's a lot of players have been released that I've been tracking. I was over in Arsenal twice in the off season as well. So there's definitely scope to try and do some business with them if we feel that the players there are right for us.
Would he be an option for this window if he has been released?
Well, look, Jack, you're never going to turn down the opportunity of bringing him back to the club if he's available. He was outstanding. And I think when the season finished, there wasn't just us that was trying to get him back. I think half the league were trying to sign him. Mm-hmm. But look, Jack has ambitions to try and play at the highest level. And when you see him sitting on the bench in Champions League games and Premier League games, I'm sure his goal will be to try and stay in England if possible.
John Russell, the Sligo Rovers manager, speaking to reporters online earlier today. And Rovers Against Pats is live on Ocean FM this Friday night from 7:45, courtesy of Henry's Bar and Restaurant. A reminder before we go, we've got 4 live GAA commentaries this Sunday on Ocean FM Sport. Cavan against Donegal in the Sam Maguire Cup is live on 105 FM from 2:00. We've 2 Talton Cup commentaries, Sligo against Kildare and Leitrim against Tipperary. Plus, the Women's All-Ireland Junior Football Championship begins for Sligo in Owen Beg on Sunday against Derry. That's also live on oceanfm.ie. As for the final whistle, we're back with you next week. Same time, same place.